Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 20B of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. Well, when last we left our heroes, we were discussing 52, and oh, what a discussion we have on tap. David D. and John Mayo return for part 2 of episode 20, and here we are, already in progress. Let's touch on Black Adam a little bit here, because while that has to play a lot into the world of World War III, with the ISIS character, and I'm not going to give away the other character that's introduced, because that's actually this week, so I don't want to even touch on that. ISIS and Black Adam. Black Adam is happy for the first time in his life. We know this is not going to last.
By the way, if I may digress for a moment, I have to just give some respect. Yeah. Black Adam, the smoothest man in comics. I mean, honestly, could you imagine a first date that is, come into my magical rock and let me give you the powers of a goddess? First date. Second date, let's go free the children of Africa and adopt them. I mean, that's better than like, oh, do you know I was in the Peace Corps for a year? No. Let's together, you and I, go free the children of Africa and adopt them. Second date. I mean, that's pretty smooth.
It's third magic, date was what?
Giving her the Diamond of Cleopatra. Third date.
Yeah.
Smoothest man in comics.
I think he's setting himself up for a really lousy marriage, because she's going to have expectations.
I guess so. I mean, he sets the bar high, but you gotta respect it.
He's a very smooth operator, let's put it that way. Oh, yeah. But still, I mean, we know that with the way that this character has gone over the years, he's genuinely a very unhappy character. And unless they're going to set up this Black Marvel family, which seems to be happening here in 52, are we even going to see a Black Marvel family after 52? Is something going to happen here with ISIS that's going to end this before it even starts, which could very well anger Black Adam to the point of starting that World War III that he hinted at early on in the series?
Sure. Plus, I mean, you know, ISIS has been great, but she could certainly, I mean, she certainly seems capable and feisty enough that she could have absolutely her plan going. I mean, so far it seemed like he's wanted to, you know, go rip the villains in half and things like that, and she's distracted them into doing nice things, and she can make flowers bloom and things like that. But to me, that actually only makes me more suspicious of her. There's that sense of power being built, but it's being built, you know. We may think that Black Adam is building a Black Adam family, but it seems perhaps that ISIS is instead building her own sort of Egyptian mythology family of her own. Like, I do feel like Black Adam is in for a big surprise.
I certainly think things could turn out very badly for Black Adam. I'm kind of hoping they don't. What I would like to see come out of this and, you know, the end of the whole Trial of Shazam stuff, wherever that lands, is that they finally position the Marvel family in a, you know, good place where it can have an ongoing series. Something where we can have, you know, Black Adam still in charge of Kandak, doing, you know, what essentially the Doctor Doom riff, if you will, that he's been doing so well for so long. Keep ISIS going. Hell, I'd bring in some of the other characters out of the whole Fawcett stable and run with that for a bit.
Mm. One thing, if I may, you know, again, just to pay a compliment, I really like the nuance in which 52 has handled Kandak, that, you know, at first, whenever we're presented with an anti-hero and one of these kind of super totalitarian, you know, almost nearly super fascist stories where it's like that power fantasy of, well, if I had all these powers, I would, you know, rip criminals in half and I would, you know, make the world fair and I would go stop all these dictators, etc. You know, he's playing out that fantasy, but I like the fact that even though Black Adam is making the trains run on time in Kandak, and is, you know, abolishing crime and all that, and is, you know, freeing these child slaves, he still has a country in which, if you go down deep into the prisons, people are being tortured and raped. Like that, you know, the way that the geopolitics of that, to me, are really satisfying, because it shows you that his way of enforcing by the sword trickles down in a way where corrupt members of his country are still going to do terrible things when no one is looking. So I really like the juxtaposition between Black Adam and ISIS and all of their happy peoples and what is happening to Question and Montoya in that dungeon. To me, that just played as, it just felt true. And I like the way that Kandak has been handled. And I feel like that has Greg Rucka all over it. You know, that just feels like it's playing right to his strength.
I would agree with that. Yeah. And they've done a great job with it.
Oh, sure. And, I mean, Question and Montoya, have had such growth in this series as well. I mean, you've seen Montoya go from this booze hound to, well, she might still be a little bit into the, you know, the promiscuity and the booze a little bit, but she has a life again. You know, she has this air about her that we haven't really seen in about 2 years out of the character, that, you know, she's just been drifting farther and farther down into the depths of despair, obviously with the death of her partner in Infinite Crisis and all this. She was completely gone. And she was no longer with her her lover. She just was not the same character anymore. She's getting back to being the Montoya that we knew in the animated series and in the early Gotham Central issues. She's starting to become that character again. The look on her face when Batwoman showed up for the first time and she thought it was Batman, because she used to be literally like the Batman lackey. You know, she, like, whenever Batman showed up, she was the fangirl. Yay, woohoo. And, you know, she'd go jump into battle and, you know, enjoy the fact that he was there. And you saw a light in her eyes that you have not seen very often out of the character. And she has grown leaps and bounds, as has Question, mind you, because, well, he's got more of a personality now than I think he has in years.
Well, Clark, what I really like about their relationship is that, because Montoya, you know, Question in the O'Neill series, which is fantastic and to me the darling of the cheap bins, if you can find it, is that he was always that person that was self-destructive, and, you know, where his character started was down in a similar depth to where he finds Montoya at the beginning of 52. And so much of that Question series, you know, like a martial arts epic, is about not only him doing the work of this vigilante, but also him kind of building up his own strength and soul and getting control and discipline and all that stuff. And that's exactly what he's doing for Montoya. And it's really fun as a reader and, you know, lover of that O'Neill series to get to watch Question kind of bump up in his own status and maturity by being the kind of person that could take somebody under his wing. You know, I mean, in that original Question series, he was somebody who could take no one under his wing, because he was himself the kind of reckless problem person. So I think it's fun to watch the way in which he's making her question certain things, giving her a reason to stay focused. And, you know, I just think that's been, you know, it reminds me of, again, getting back to TV. Homicide, to me, is also one of the best TV shows there's ever been, writing-wise. And it goes to show that sometimes the most interesting romantic relationship, sorry, the most interesting love relationship doesn't need to be romantic. You know, and the writer, creator of Homicide, Tom Fontana, refers to Bayliss and Pendleton as the best love story on television that was going on. I don't know if either of you guys watched that show.
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
I haven't.
Well, I'm losing it, so I'll wrap it up.
I do know what you're talking about, though, because I've actually I've heard people describe Homicide to me before,
and,
so I can understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and they had sort of a mentor-student, you know, relationship. They were both straight men. I mean, well, actually, all right, I guess Bayliss wasn't, but that's another story. But yeah, it wasn't a romantic relationship, but it was a love relationship that was absolutely engaging to watch. And the same is true with Montoya in Question. It's not in any way a romantic relationship, but it's actually the most engaging love story in the series so far.
Without question.
No, with question. He's in this.
Oh, yeah.
You're all right, folks.
But also Batwoman. We definitely need to touch on her a little bit, because we haven't seen much of her, but from what we've seen, well, there's definitely a new member of the Bat family, and I have a feeling we'll be seeing her around in, you know, post-52. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if she gets her own series eventually. I mean, there's so much depth to her character, and it's a character that was around in, you know, the pre-crisis days and is now back. Do you feel there's a real need for Batwoman in the DC Universe post-52, or do you see her basically sort of only belonging here without a world with a Batman in it?
I really don't think there's a huge mandate to add any more characters to the Batman family. That being said, I don't think she's a bad addition. Do I think they'll try to spin out a new series with her? Oh, certainly. I'd be amazed if they didn't. We haven't really seen all that much of her, and, you know, what I've seen I've liked, but I'm not, you know, thinking, oh gosh, they've got to give us all that much more. She'd be better as a supporting character, maybe, you know, going into Birds of Prey or something like that, versus a lead character in her own book.
Okay.
Yeah, I pretty much agree. I mean, I like that, especially because, you know, and maybe we'll get into all this, but because there was so much publicity around the launch of the Batwoman character, I really liked that her issue wasn't a typical origin story, and in keeping with the mysterious tone of 52 and in keeping our eye on our six-person cast, she really was only there as a character for Montoya in that issue, more than this issue being, okay, and now let's get this new character going, and we're going to show you an origin story, and we're going to just launch this ship, and off she goes to her new title. I like that we saw her sparingly, and that it was all about Montoya's relationship with her, and we were seeing her from Montoya's perspective. So I like what we don't know about her. I guess they may try to launch a Batwoman book, and maybe Kathy Kane will be in the suit, and maybe somebody else will be in the suit. You know, I do feel like there's something to the story arc that Montoya is going through, where she seems to be transitioning from thinking like a detective to thinking like a vigilante. And I wonder if that may go all the way to the point of us seeing Montoya in a suit. And if so, could that be the Batwoman suit if something happened to Kathy Kane? I don't know. But so far in the Kathy Kane character, I will say that in keeping with the theme of earning power and earning being a hero, we don't have much of a sense of whether she's earned a Batmantle yet. Like, it seems like she, you know, had a lot of private tutors teach her lessons and things like that. And it kind of seems like she's doing this whole vigilante thing, you know, maybe for kicks. I mean, it seems almost like a kind of rich person's hobby rather than a mission. I mean, again, we haven't seen much of her, I shouldn't judge, but if that's true, I could see her coming to a quick end. I could see Kathy Kane coming to a quick end if she's playing in a game that she's not ready for. Because as we've seen so many times in Batman books, if you try to start playing the sort of Bat game when you're not ready for it, terrible things happen to you. So I wonder if we may end up with a Batwoman after 52, but not a Kathy Kane Batwoman.
Okay. I can sort of understand where you're coming from with that. And actually, when I first heard about the character of Batwoman, when they first decided that they were going to introduce her, I thought it was going to be Montoya. When I first saw her in that splash page at the end of Infinite Crisis, I was putting money on the fact that it would be Montoya. When they announced it wasn't going to be Montoya, it really surprised me. So it could very well be Montoya after this is all said and done. We don't know. We just got to wait and see here. Something could happen where Kane ends up in a pool of her own blood, and Montoya, you know, out of respect for her, out of their previous relationship, goes out there and becomes Batwoman herself.
And
who knows?
I would think they'd be better off leaving it with Kate Kane, who is somebody that could show up on equal footing with Bruce Wayne in society functions and, you know, as Batwoman against Batman type thing, and be a potential rival versus, you know, let's take a previously established character, put him in a costume we've built up with somebody else. You know, I think it'd be a mistake to do that with Montoya. So.
Could be, yeah. One thing I will say that I really like about Kate Kane, just from sort of a clever metatextual point of view, is I love the notion that there's a Kane family in Gotham that's just as rich as the Waynes, and that explains why, of course, throughout the history of Batman books, people have like said, oh, Kane Street and Kane Dock and Kane, you know, they've, as a tribute to Bob Kane, will just put the word Kane into Gotham, and I love that now there's actually a reason for it. You know, in the same way that you see the name Rockefeller all over New York City, there's now a reason why Kane pops up in so many places in Gotham, and to me that's just really clever.
It really is, yeah. I've been waiting for them to introduce a Kane character for years, to tell you the truth, and I'm glad they finally did, even if it isn't the form.
Again, they have one pre-crisis. So.
Well, yeah.
I didn't realize that. Who was it pre-crisis that was
it was
the same
It was Kathy Kane, who was Batwoman, and it was her niece, Betty Kane, that was the character that became who's Batgirl, who became Bat-Girl, I should say, who became Flamebird of the Titans and stuff.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. Wait. In current continuity, who's Flamebird?
Flamebird is the Batgirl-looking one, except more of a flame motif or whatever, who's shown up occasionally in the Titans. In the Superboy fight in Infinite Crisis, there were a couple of characters who got bounced to that Earth 2. She was among them.
Okay. And that actually makes sense to me now. Okay. Is her name still Kane? Is her last name still Kane these days?
Yeah.
Or?
Last I looked.
All right. Yeah, well, that actually makes me think, perhaps maybe in this reality she'll be a cousin
of
Kathy or something like that.
Of Batwoman.
Okay.
So, and again, this all goes back to the 50s era Batman stuff, you know, in the comics.
Yeah. I doubt they'll leave that as a coincidence. They're definitely going to play on the Kane angle at one point.
By the way, sorry.
Let's go on to the
funny noise for a moment. I have a cat here, I think, that was desperately trying to make his podcast by purring and rubbing himself against the mouthpiece of the phone. So I don't know if you actually heard that.
Perfectly understandable. I've had dogs in mine a couple times, so... let's go on to the Blackboard, because as opposed to just talking about the Metal Men, I think it would be best to actually just go into the Blackboard, where the Metal Men do play a part on some of the things on the Blackboards. Sure. Now, I'm going with the list that you actually have here on the forums that you've provided to everybody, David.
Oh, and again,
so
I've got to credit King33 with the guy on the forum that actually took the time to make this list. So I've augmented it with a few like guesses and filled in some information, but he did the sort of, you know, madness work of picking through each and every inch of those panels to give us this list.
Excellent. Well, thank you, King, for doing that in the first place. All right, here we go with board one. Basically, I'm going to go fact by fact here, and then you'll give a short response on that, what we think it might have to
all
do
right.
with
a lot
what's
of them,
going
a lot
on.
Of them will just have to okay. pass, but I will do my best. Here we go.
Exactly. Well, the first one is, I think I kind of agree with what you have here about it just being an overall title. Time is, but that could be Time is Broken, I'm assuming.
Yeah, you know, and again, a lot of these are Ping's notes, but I think, I mean, again, that's the left-hand board, and as he's got here, there is definitely an overall theme to that, you know, time is up for grabs, time is a lot of the things that follows, and again, if you read across, that half of Time is Broken. And it's his fault.
Okay.
But I do think that's probably the single most important thing on the board is the fact that, you know, currently in 52, Time is Broken, and it is somehow Booster's fault.
Dead by Lead. This is the one that I think all three of us can sort of touch on here. Dead by Lead. Now, right away, Lead of the Metal Men comes to mind, but that could mean anything. Now, John, Dead by Lead.
It could also be a reference to Daxamites. Who are,
ooh,
you know, poisoned by lead. I mean, those are the two main things I can think of, is Metal Men and Daxamites.
Okay. David?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking Metal Men. I don't know the Daxamites, but, you know, and maybe lead of the, you know, of the Metal Men will play a part in, you know, killing somebody. You know, we have seen that Magnus is involved with various mad scientists and involved with Dr. Murrow, so... You know, I think that the Metal Men will be what he uses to, you know, get himself out of that trouble.
Further, Time is Different. Now, this has sort of been explained a little bit here, as obviously, you know, Booster has a different history than what is actually going to happen here. But I guess this means that the future itself has changed, too. So, further, Time is Different. David, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree that, I mean, it, not only is time broken, and, I mean, because we have things from a fixed future, you know, at least the 25th century with Booster, further on with Legion, there's been a number of time travelers that have made important contributions to the present. If further time is different, then that's even more reason why the current time is broken. You know, our current time depends on some of these future people doing the things they've done. So if further up the time stream is broken, then our present is in even more trouble. Would be my guess on that.
I see it mainly as a nod to things like the Legion of Superheroes is now not what they used to be. You know, things mm-hmm. of that nature. I don't know that, you know, we really know much about what Booster's future... we don't know that Booster's future has or hasn't changed at this point. And it could also be that time works different further forward than it does now. You know, this could play into
okay.
the Earth 2 thing. It could play into, you know, half a dozen things. I don't know.
Well, I think the further time is different does definitely have to do something with the Legion, as that does make a lot of sense there. But I think also, eventually, Commandy might play into this at one point or another.
That's a good thing, because you've got Commandy and Tommy Tomorrow, which in, I don't remember if it was Crisis Infinite Earth or whatever, they were essentially kind of slammed to be the same person, just alternate takes on it.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that does make a little bit of sense there, because, and again, Commandy was hinted in the Battle for Bloodhaven as there was a Command
right.
D, if I remember correctly. So that could certainly lead to that. He won't smell it.
It's definitely Ralph. You know, Ralph.
It's got to be. Yeah.
Or Ralph won't smell what's really going on. Hopefully not until it's too late.
Yeah.
But that, you know. Plus, as we talked about earlier, I mean, if there is somebody manipulating him, he clearly, you know, isn't realizing it.
I could certainly agree with that. In fact, that does make a lot of sense here because, well, he's definitely being manipulated at this point, and, well, if he is being manipulated, he doesn't know it yet, and hopefully he will know it soon, because if this series ends with him still being manipulated, I'm going to be very annoyed.
Yeah, I'm not sure where they're going with him, because I certainly don't see them turning him into the next Dr. Fate.
No. I don't think so either.
I'm wondering, and again, I don't want to digress too much because we have a lot of board to get through, but I wonder if there's a way in which if he helps the helmet find a new... I mean, we watched, you know, the last Dr. Fate and his wife got reunited and got to kind of go off to the dreamland together in JSA. I wonder if helping the current Fate helmet might grant Ralph a similar gift.
I was wondering that, too.
You know, because it would be hard us to get Ralph back at anything but retired after everything they've done to him. So I wonder if there's a kind of reward for him that puts him and Sue back together, you know, in a turn.
For him and a facsimile of Sue.
Oh, jeez, that'd be terrible.
Yeah.
Martian Manhunter with a Sue puppet for that creepy side of Martian Manhunter
that
none of us ever knew.
Well, no. I mean, this could be something like what happened with Superman of Earth 2 and Lois.
That's true.
You know that.
I was thinking more that you know, Ralph goes to the dreaming, and you know he dreams Sue back.
Ooh.
Okay.
We certainly have seen that Ralph is willing to try anything to get her back. You know, and with Fate, I mean, he is in very much like, I forget which myth it is, but that story of the person that you know goes to the underworld to get his wife back. And, you know, then there's that awful thing where he can't turn around and she has to follow him. And if he turns around, she turns into a pillar of salt. And we all know how that ends. But Ralph is in that similarly desperate point. So I feel like he's willing to do whatever and make deals with whoever he needs to get her back.
The Four Horsemen will end her reign. And that's reign spelled R-A-I-N, as in the stuff that falls from the sky. Now... This screams ISIS to me.
Especially because she can make it rain. The Four could it be the Marvel family and Black Adam? Could it be Black Adam with a new Black Adam family? I don't know, but I do think that that's definitely ISIS territory.
This could have something to do with that World War III that we're hinting at. Maybe it is ISIS that starts that and not Black Adam.
Sure.
We don't know.
Well, war would be one of the
23.
War would be one of the Four Horsemen. You know, war, famine.
Sure.
That's true. Find the last L. And this is not the letter L, this is E-L, as in the Superman family. Now, to me, and I, David put this down here as Mon-El, I would agree with that, but would it be Mon-El in this continuity, or would it be Mon-El in Legion?
Actually, King put that one down, because I don't know, any Legion question John should be able to do, though.
I am not expecting this to be Mon-El, although the L is in quotes, so that would support that theory. Because Mon-El already, at least pre-Infinite Crisis, existed in this time frame as Valor or whatever, and got bounced forward. But maybe we're gonna, you know, find him and find out what's up with him. Or there's some other survivor of Krypton. Arguably, there are three L's to be had. There's Kal-El as Clark Kent. There's Kara Zor-El of Supergirl, and then there's the other Kara Zor-El, I guess, of Power Girl. But that would be just an L, not an EL.
I think we're all forgetting the 80s prestige or 80s Baxter format El Diablo.
Oh.
Well.
Somehow I doubt it.
I'd actually like to see that El Diablo come back. I like
it. Well, how about this? It has been reported that in the Donner run of Superman that there is going to be a new Superboy showing up.
Mm.
So maybe that has something to do with it. Because he is apparently going to be Kryptonian, and I'm not sure whether he's going to be an L, but they did say that he is at least going to be Kryptonian. So who knows? And speaking of Kryptonians, Man of Steel. Now, obviously, since John Henry Irons is made of steel now, I guess that would be him. Not much discussion to be had on that one. But this one is the joke. Sonic Disruption crossed out. Time Masters, Time Servants.
Sonic Disruptors, and of course crossed out because that was the famously unfinished miniseries. There's already been... Was it in the Super Chief issue that we got another Sonic Disruptors joke? I know we got like a Fastback joke and a Silver Blade joke. But I feel like Sonic Disruptors has gotten, you know, a little...
I'm not totally convinced the Silver Blade stuff is necessarily a joke, because that actually plays into the way that series worked.
Yeah?
Silver Blade was basically about an actor who did a series of movies, including Silver Blade as kind of his main, you know, success or whatever. And his power was he could kind of become any of the characters he ever played. So it could be that they're asserting that these movies happened in the DC universe, the actor exists, and we could see him again.
Yeah, although, is it something, you know, Fastback is clearly somebody we're not going to get back because he's like a turtle or something, right? Is Silver Blade remembered, you think, well, or is Silver Blade remembered as like, ah, ha, ha, remember when we published that?
I don't think Silver Blade is remembered.
At all.
At all.
Yeah.
I have no idea
who Silver Blade is.
It was a 12-issue series that, you know, a few people read. I don't think it's ever been traded. I'd be surprised if it ever is, unless it's going to play into something. Mm-hmm. I think they're more using it as an opportunity to dust off anything and everything in the DC stable and kind of assert, yeah, it kind of plays in somehow. Mm-hmm. Now, are they ever going to do anything with it? No, but I don't think it's just a joke in terms of, ah, ha, ha, we're reusing the name. You know?
Could be.
Okay. It could be indeed, but, well, Time Masters, Time Servants, that's the part of it that I think gets me the most here, because, well, Time Masters, Time Servants, the Masters we haven't seen, the Servants, I'd say, are the monitors.
We haven't seen the Time Masters in this series, but there was a Time Masters miniseries 15 years ago or whatever, with Rip Hunter and crew.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what it's coming down to is, they're no longer in charge of time. They're more having to clean up time.
I gotcha. Okay. So in other words, a new role for them.
And I see it more as the Rip Hunter types. I don't think it's connected to the monitors.
The Reach.
Yeah, that's a weird one. What's the name of the, like, that edge of the universe where Red Tornado saw something? And, you know, what is there a name for that? Like, that edge? That's not the Reach, is it?
I
don't think there is. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, there may be, but
because remember that is a big,
I think the Reach might have to do with Elongated Man.
That's true. Because there is a big plot point, you know, that we haven't discussed, you know, regarding, you know, the space team, you know, Buddy and the rest, and the fact that they witnessed something that has put a bounty on their head, and it's probably the same thing that were similar to what Red Tornado witnessed before he blew up. And I don't know, the Reach, especially the capital R letters, just feels like something to do with that.
Those are lowercase.
Could be a new hero.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. I guess I had it.
What gets me is it's repeated three times, and the last one's underlined. The repetition somehow plays into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's somebody's magic word or something like that. I don't know. Who knows? The Tornado is in pieces. That much we pretty much know. That's
and
Red Tornado.
And he's scattered across the galaxy.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, apparently, well, his pieces do eventually get back together, but we're not sure whether or not that's going to happen in 52, whether or not they're going to show that, because, well, his body is completely repaired in Justice League.
I don't know that they necessarily used all original parts.
True.
Okay. By the way, too, that I just find that Red Tornado's, you know, head or part of his body being in Australia and things like that, what a great sort of Shakespeare-esque device that we now have this character who has a piece of information that's clearly important that he needs to get to everyone else, but, you know, has been separated because he's crash-landed and now he's in the outback, and so that's sort of a really classic storytelling device of a tragedy.
And, of course, what does he have to tell people? Yeah. 52. 52, 52, 52. I'm not kryptonite.
And that one's in quotes. The quotes are relevant for some reason. I don't know how or why.
Don't ask me why, but I see this line coming from Supernova at one point. I'm not sure why. I can't even explain it. I see it coming from Supernova at one point.
I see it more from potentially like a Metamorpho type. I mean, this could go towards, if we get like a Daxamite, like Mon-El or whatever, he could claim to turn into kryptonite, he's just glowing lead or whatever, and you know, hey, gee, I fell ill, hey, I'm not kryptonite, that kind of, but that's a stretch.
Yeah, I've got no idea on that.
Something will happen with if not Metamorpho, then with his Shift at one point, I know. So, who knows, maybe he has something to play
with. Is it possible that blood kryptonite is sentient, or if there really is blood kryptonite, because that's in question too.
Oh, right.
That's a good question. Yeah, that could play something into it. I mean, maybe one of the elemental heroes was forced to turn, like you previously mentioned about Metamorpho. Maybe one of the elemental heroes was forced to turn into kryptonite, and then eventually, you know, he chokes out those words. Who knows? It hurts to breathe.
And again, hurts is underlined.
Ping had a guess on here that could maybe refer to Aquaman or an Aquaman thingy, but you know. This was early on before we knew much about that run, and I haven't read it, so I don't know.
Yeah. It could be because we're back to the, you know, hour out of water, he can't breathe type crap, but...
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, okay. So, yeah, that sounds like the new Aquaman, or the new old Aquaman, or...
Or some variation thereof, yeah.
Haven't read it.
Well, we haven't even seen the old Aquaman yet in this series.
Yes, we have.
So, I mean,
In the first issue in that gathering scene. Because if you look at that scene, there are a couple of people who, based on other events, can't be there. Because we see Green Arrow, we see Aquaman, and one or two others.
Nightwing. Yeah, Nightwing was there, which made me believe at the time, in fact, I talked about this on the episode that we did, that it was Jason Todd in the Nightwing outfit, which explains things a little bit, because obviously if Robin's not there, Nightwing's not going to be there.
Yeah. I get the feeling that when we get, let's say, the first 52 hardcover, that gathering will be redrawn.
No doubt.
Yeah. Wouldn't be surprised.
I hope when they gather, when they collect stuff, that there's a slipcase extra book edition that explains everything.
That'd be good. That'll make it cost about $300 as opposed to $200. The Scarab is eternal, which obviously is a Blue Beetle reference.
There's another possibility. There is another Scarab. He's no longer in play, but Dr. Fate, Hector Hall, used to be the Silver Scarab, and he's the son of two people who reincarnate themselves.
Oh.
So it's a stretch.
Oh, really good. The Scarab is eternal has a question mark at the end of it. That's pretty good.
And also,
the parents reincarnate. What if the offspring reincarnates also?
Exactly. When Isis got her powers and stuff, what was she given by Black Adam for that? Was that a scarab too, or I forget?
It was like a necklace. It was like the necklace of Isis or something. It just looked like a. Yeah, it wasn't. It had no. I don't recall it having any sort of animal or nature totem to it. It was just like a necklace.
Okay, I just thought I'd check.
Okay. Earth, and that's circled with arrows pointing at it, clearing path through cluster of circled 52s, which are thicker around Earth than anywhere else on either board. So that could just have to do with New Earth, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I still feel like what Red Tornado saw, you know, and that's a big question that I don't have a guess at what the 52 really is, but I do feel like it's something that's coming. You know, and I've heard all sorts of, you know, is it the new gods? Is it the, you know, whatever it is, I feel like there's 52 of something headed to Earth. And that's what Red Tornado got a glimpse of. That's my guess.
I think he actually said it's coming or they're coming or something to that effect. So,
that's true.
Yeah, that's possible.
That's what I feel like that.
Well, I still...
The Earth when all the 52's kind of heading towards it.
Well, I still think that this might have something to do with the parallel universes also, with all the 52's circling it. You know, I mean, maybe this has something to do with the alternate Earths out there.
I hope not.
Maybe this has something to do with
no,
Earth, too. I hope it doesn't.
Oh, I hope not. Because I just feel like that just feels like old business, doesn't it?
I was confused in the Justice League Zero when they reintroduced the concept of Earth 2, because I'm like, how can this be? We just got rid of the multiverse a second time.
That's down the line, though. That's the future. So who knows? That could be something that happens or doesn't happen. So they say only two of those plot lines are actually going to really happen. So the rest of those are like potential possibilities.
Only two will happen, like in the Meltzer run or in already made plans. Only two of those are going to happen.
I think it's two in the Meltzer run, but I'm assuming that most of those are not actually going to really happen.
Okay.
Or if they do happen, they happen really far down
the line. I see
them
as potential futures, but even as a potential future, we got rid of the multiverse again. It boggled my mind, is all I can say.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Where is the Curry Air?
He's in Kurt Busiek's Aquaman series. That no one
I guess.
Except John.
Well, again, there are multiple possibilities here. Because
really?
He could be Aqua Baby, okay? It could be this new Arthur Curry we're seeing in the Sword of Atlantis stuff. It could also be his other son who had been showing up in Aquaman. It could also be Tempest, because it's heir, not son. It could be who would inherit his throne. You know, there are a number of possibilities.
Well, could be that guy on YouTube.
No, I'm just kidding.
You know, the Aquaman planet. Getting late, you know, the jokes are moving on.
We're skipping who is Supernova because we already know.
Noted has his two words, though.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Maybe the two words does play something into that. I don't know. I mean, if there are two people out there and one of them has a space in his name, that'd be ridiculous.
It'd be copyright infringement, and my God, Booster would be on top of that. No,
oh, hell yeah. we're on to board number two now. And
200 years from now.
Oh. Okay.
I don't know what it means.
200 years from now.
Because that'd be, or 2,000, I mean.
2,000 years from now would be
no,
Legion,
that'd be 995 years past Legion, potentially. Or at least
That's DC. Wait, that's DC 1 million, isn't it?
DC 1 million is 87,000 years. It's a million months.
Ah, damn. Okay. All right. See, I'm like grasping at straws in my head because I'm thinking like maybe it does have something to do with supernova itself because maybe supernova comes from 2,000 years in the future.
I don't know of anything set around the year, what, I guess it'd be 4,000.
Okay.
Nothing I can think of.
Command-E happens later than that, I'm assuming, right?
That seemed to be like the end of time-ish, but not quite that long.
Okay. All right, we're going to skip Broken because that has something to do with time is broken.
Yes,
so.
Exactly.
Epsilon message?
And again, this is Ping's description. It's just he's noting that the second board has Epsilon ahead of everything that's written. So everything that's written has an Epsilon value.
About half of them.
Oh, half of them. Sorry, many. Sorry, many of the notes.
Yes,
many of the
notes. That's
And I'm sorry, I don't have the comic in front of me. I'm working off of his list. But that, yeah, many of them have an Epsilon value. Should I read, or do you want to read how he describes Epsilon values? Is that, I don't know if you...
Let me read it off of here since I have it in front of me. Many notes on the board are prefaced with an Epsilon, which in this case seems to be variable as defined by the following. Kev versus, which is, I'm assuming that's, wait, AU is gold and PB is lead. So AU plus PB. Now we all remember our order of operations, right? AU is the channel, is the chemical symbol for gold, PB is lead. Lead is mentioned on board one, and we've already noted the way it seems to combine the two running themes of Metal Men and Daxamites. TE is tellurium, which is also 52 on the atomic scale. It was discovered by the ancient Greeks and is commonly used in military-grade radiation shielding and the casings of disposable batteries. To make life easier, I will use an epsilon to denote symbol here fourth. Okay, so that has 52 value as well, so who knows?
Yeah, I went to a liberal arts college for acting, so I'm going to leave all the math and science to you guys. I'm going to be no help on, you know... periodic table of elements, math. Go on.
Okay. What happened to the Son of Superman?
There are multiple people they could be referring to. This could be Superboy. This could be the Superman Jr. from way back when, depending what all they're trying to pull in. Have we seen any other Son of Superman? He's had a daughter or two. That's all I'm coming
There's,
up with.
There's something that Ping has, and again, I wonder if this is going to be too obscure for them to pull it into this continuity, but he had the Phantom Stranger, who, as one of his possible origins dictates, is the Son of Superman from the Kingdom, also known as the Guardian of Hypertime. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, Darth Kramer added that. So,
okay.
I mean, it says, you know, possible or impossible, I suppose, as anything else. I don't know if they're going to deal anything from Kingdom into their, you know, into their deck, but...
They already have.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, somebody mentioned that.
One or two of the characters elsewhere.
Hmm.
Yeah, Plastic Man's son.
Oh, okay.
Although, actually, that predates all this, because that was in the Wade run of Justice League.
Okay. Where is the Batman? Yep. We all know that. So, who is the Batwoman? We know that as well.
Well... with Batman, we know he's essentially on sabbatical or whatever. We don't know exactly where he is, though.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, he's just on his, you know, super happy fun adventure time.
Which,
so.
By the way, is a year that I'm really happy to not have to read in Batman Cup. Like, that's another great use of the 52 years. Same thing with, you know, Green Arrow. It's like, if everybody wants to go, like, climb mountains and, you know, shoot arrows and meditate and all, they can do that without me having to read much of it. Like, I think it's exciting that we'll get a Batman issue of 52, but that's, like, plenty.
Are you reading Green Arrow right now?
Train. Yeah, and you know, and that's all right, you know, but I'm glad that we got a lot of other stuff before we got back to that.
Agreed.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I just get so bored. It's like, oh, God, another origin, you know, another it's like a montage, you know, it's like, oh boy, another montage of, you know, punching dummies and climbing mountains and, you know, doing push-ups. And, anyway, sorry, go on.
The opening of Batman Begins. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who is the Batwoman? We know the answer to already. Who is Diana Prince? We know the answer to that, but they don't. So I'm assuming that, the Wonder Woman series, spoiler here, Diana Prince is back, pretty much, so Wonder Woman has a secret identity again.
I'm just glad they, got that out in the first few issues, because if it was, any more, we may have another, couple of years wait.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, this one's going to be done, I think, in 2020,
oh, good.
I think, but don't
quote
me on that.
Speeded it up.
So. Oh, yeah, yeah. Him and Kevin Smith are going to collaborate in the next arc.
All right, all right. By the way, what issue is the Rip Hunter board in? I've got my printed up list, but I could actually look at the comic
six.
What issue? John,
issue 6, pages 18 and 19.
Thank you. Sorry, go on.
Don't ask the question.
I love
it
that
lies.
Don't ask the question. It lies. That's just such a one, And maybe that means something. Maybe it just sounded cool on the board. Who knows? But that's a heck of a thing.
And maybe the question's keeping something from Montoya.
Yeah, I mean, I can't get into issue 23 spoilers, so I will be really vague about this. But let's just say, for me, the question has come into possession of something that I think is dangerous.
Yes.
So that's all I'll say. That if...
He's come into possession of an issue of a Watchmen, and he's going to sue for copyright
infringement.
He's
come into possession for the script to Alan Moore's Big Numbers number 3.
I thought he picked up that copy of Who's Who on the floor there below the chalkboard.
And he's deconstructed, and the script, which is Eaton Artists, has driven him mad. But no, he has picked up a certain thing that could potentially, I think, have a corrupting influence on the question who's known to be a voracious reader and have a perhaps too open mind. That's all, I'll say about that. And I also love the It Lies. That's just very cool.
Yeah.
Well, and the It Lies potentially could refer to Skeets. But...
Although we need to get Skeets near the question, I suppose, but... Yeah, I'm sorry, anyway.
Let's see here, Secret 5.
Perhaps not all of the Secret 6 will make it out of their miniseries. Has that miniseries ended?
No.
No.
I think even when it started, they had lost one.
Did they? Oh, okay.
They have a replacement. I forget exactly who got replaced, when, why, etc.
Hmm.
Yeah. So maybe we'll see the Secret 5, as it were, at some point during this. Even though the Secret 6 is going on now, this is their adventures after 52. Mm. So
yeah.
Immortal, the IM is crossed out, leaving Mortal Savage, which has something to do with the JSA Classified.
Yes.
I'm sure.
No one is reading except John.
Yes.
Hey,
did you?
I read it. Yeah, I did.
Was it anything at all?
It was a good issue.
Or isn't Classified like old stories and stuff?
No,
there are new stories in there also. Okay. Yeah, in fact, actually, they're doing one now with Hourman and Bane, which actually is pretty damn good.
That.
So,
and I think JSA Classified is better than JLA Classified, but
Without
none of them are something
Without
that's just, oh gosh, key continuity that you've got to be getting.
Yeah, okay. So maybe Immortal Savage has a role to play that we haven't seen yet.
It's possible. World War III, why, how, we've already touched on that, so I'll go past that. Who is Supernova again? We don't need to touch on that.
But it is great that it's, the fact that it's repeated. I mean, you have to imagine Rip Hunter writing all this stuff, so clearly it is interesting that he's kind of pining over that. Plus, it's important to point out that World War III on that huge globe has some particular X's on the map.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of which is in the middle of the ocean.
Which makes me a bit worried there for any island nations that have superheroes.
I wonder if Atlantis
is. Okay. Is that where the mascara should be, where that X is? Anybody know the DC globe?
Well, it could be, but they seem to have vacated the real estate in Infinite Crisis. I was thinking it's more Atlantis.
Oh, okay. Although, that isn't that off of California?
Yeah.
Or is that...
Oh, like they couldn't move it.
Well, that's true.
Fine, Poseidon, the sister city.
There you go. Or Sub Diego.
No, that was Southern California.
Yeah, I know. But still, Sub Diego is just funny to me.
Fun to say.
All right, someone is monitoring. If they see us, they see me.
They see us,
assuming...
they see me. No if.
Okay, there we go. If they see us, they see me. Okay, they see us, they see me. Okay. So, the monitors.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's interesting that he would be afraid that he's being seen, too. I don't know what that matters, but there is a huge amount of paranoia. I mean, the lab is all broken. It just, it really has that feeling of Rip Hunter being not in the best state of mind when he wrote all this.
Well, I mean, what would you be thinking? If you think somebody's monitoring you and that they see you, do you really want to basically write that down and tell them? that you know they know?
Oh, that's true. They see me, so it's almost like, yeah, I see you seeing me right this. That's true.
Chimera lives again?
I don't know what Chimera is. Do you, John, do you know what Chimera is?
I'm thinking that the villain in the Hawkman, Hawkgirl stuff, there was a similar named character in a miniseries ages ago, but nothing else is really ringing a bell on that one for me.
Yeah, I have no idea who Chimera is. No idea whatsoever.
I bet someone out, I bet someone
old gods
out in podcast
are...
land knows it.
I'm certain, yeah. Like Adam over at Comic Geek Speak, could give us half a dozen different things, no question.
Well, if anybody does know, comictiming@gmail.com, and we'll read it on the next
and
episode.
And to the people listening, I'd just like to say, if you're still listening at this point, congratulations, you are a 52 fan.
We did tell them it was going to be a 52-hour podcast.
It seems to be well on our way.
Hey, it's episode 20,
we're telling
man,
it
come on.
In real time.
Oh, I'm not complaining. I'm just thanking them, whomever they are, that are still with us here in the bottom of the whatever hour this is.
Yeah. The old gods are dead. The new gods want what's left. Isis.
The old gods could also be the titans of myth and stuff who vacated in the Donna Troy series. And the new gods want what's left of reality, because apparently it's not all there, because we've seen some devastation and whatnot. I mean, clearly this is literally the new gods.
And shouldn't... Yeah. Isn't New Gods, such as, you know, like the Kirby New Gods, isn't it usually capital N, capital G, New Gods?
Yes,
that's
this
true.
Is the old gods, lowercase O, capital G, are dead, all caps. The New Gods, lowercase N, uppercase G, want what's left, underlined.
That's why I'm thinking it's going to have something to do with Black Adam and Isis. Because they are new gods, you know? I mean, they have the powers of gods.
With Isis, I mean, an argument could be made she is an old god, kind of reincarnated, or, I guess just has the powers of...
Yeah.
I don't put too much stock in the capitalization and casing and stuff, because things like Secret Five are all uppercase, Immortal Savage is all uppercase,
true.
You know, it's...
Yeah.
Not saying you're wrong, I'm just, you know...
No, but hey, no, that's a good point, though. Curry Air is uppercase. Yeah, that's true. It's not terribly consistent.
Yeah. Well, here's one that obviously has something to do with me. I'm supposed to be dead.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be dead, question mark.
You know, I've come back to life about four times.
Well,
so, I'm supposed to be dead. That's to do with something
Rip
with
Hunter
him.
At the
I'm
end
assuming,
of Time
you know.
Masters was believed to be dead. He was actually somewhere in the prehistoric era or whatnot, I believe.
And now he's back.
Well, the thing is, we don't know when he wrote this, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, it could have been sitting there for years.
Centuries.
Ooh.
Like 52 BC, maybe.
Oh. You know what? I think he got something there, but here's a question. Where the hell did he get the blackboard?
He's a time traveler. I mean...
But if he was stuck in 52 BC...
I suspect his lab exists kind of sort of across all time, and that he originally set it up way back, and it just travels forward. And the other thing is he has potentially at least...
Yeah.
One working time travel machine in this room.
That's true.
You mean you have a time machine and you don't have any goddamn coffee filters in this? Now, when you say it's been, is there anything about? I know later on during the whole Skeet thing, he kind of locks the door and sets it for a million, you know, AD. We weren't led to believe that there was anything like. We haven't seen any other locked or sealed numbers. I'm looking at the page before.
When he goes into this, I thought it had been set for January 1st, 52 AD, or BC, or whichever, I forget. Hang on.
Yeah, that's true. So that was the last time that he would be locked in, or anyway, I'm getting a time travel headache. But yeah, that is interesting, though. I mean, you know, we don't know, because he could have left any when and gone to any when, we don't know how long all this stuff's been sitting here, including the stuff on the board.
Yeah. Well, also, that makes the when am I, which is next on the board, make a lot more sense, because if he has no idea where the hell he is, then that makes a lot more sense.
And he may not be able to get out of this thing, depending how it's locked, etc. So...
True. Hey, I just thought of something, actually. What if he is in 52 BC, and he sent the board forward so that somebody would find it?
You know how he would do that, too. He'd leave the board there.
Oh, yeah.
Traveling forward very easy...
But
the question is, does he have any working time machines or not? Because the time level there, or the time sphere or whatever, that looks broken. The only other time travel device I'm seeing is the time pool, and I can't tell if it works or not.
Now, the last thing on the board is others, and I put the emphasis on that because there's a question mark. Is this other people out of time? Is this other people involved here?
It could be.
We don't know.
Rip Hunters. There's at least two.
Ooh. That's a good question.
Because there's the Rip Hunter Time Master, and then there's Hunter, who's part of
the Linear Men?
The Linear Men.
Yes.
So.
It could be. Could be. Maybe he's first finally finding that out now, where, holy crap, there's more than one of me. The four itself, we'll just...
Board, and that was the Lazarus Pit Rises.
Yeah. And I don't think I've got to add that. I don't think that's on the ping list, but it should be. Especially because if the Lazarus Pit were to rise again... Who might they use it on?
I certainly
know Ralph would use it on. Be good. Like, yeah. It can bring you back from the dead, right? It doesn't just bring you. So yeah. So I just if a Lazarus Pit, like the one last seen in that Batman annual explaining Jason Todd in the past, or something like that, rose again. Who knew?
Where was that one located?
I forget. I feel like it's one of the ones that got destroyed later, or buried later.
Because again, I was thinking the last one that existed was in the Batcave.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, that could explain why Supernova went there in the first place.
That's true. We saw him look at the glove, but, you know.
I think he wanted the glove. Not that we know that he even took it, but...
True.
That whole scene didn't work for me because it was not clear how he got there, what the hell he was doing other than sightseeing.
I think it was just sightseeing.
I don't know. That kind of does work for me because it was so obtuse of a scene that I know for me it really shook up my own Supernova theory. It was like, oh, what does Booster want with the Robin suit? You know what I mean? So I wonder if that's meant to be thrown in as a really strange glimpse into a private Supernova moment that makes everybody doubt who and what he is.
I think it plays into him being a version of Booster, particularly an older, wiser one. Because that would be the reminder to him that you can't mess around. People can die.
Oh, yeah.
I need to take this seriously. There is a cost to it if I don't.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, I mean, there could be lots of ways to explain it away later. And again, maybe it was so brief that maybe things like looking at the Robin suit ends up being a throwaway later on once we figure out who Supernova is. But again, to me... That scene worked because it was like a moment of obtuseness. It just deepened the mystery. Like, wow, he knows that there's the Batcave, and what's he doing there? Like, to me, it was just all about adding questions.
Yes, and it did. It did do that. I hope that when it's all said and done and they start collecting stuff, that one of the things they release is the series of scripts for the whole thing.
Plus, I mean, some of the best scripts I've ever read, like, you know, the classic one, of course, is in the graffiti edition of Watchmen. I love the conversational tone, like when you really read Alan Moore talking to Dave Gibbons, and I just can only imagine. They'd probably release a censored, you know, cleaned up script, but it would be cool to read a script in which it's not just one writer talking to one artist, but it's kind of a whole room of writers communicating and keeping each other on track, as well as keeping the breakdown artist and the artist on track. Like, there needs to be a clarity of communication in that script, unlike a usual comic script. Right?
And I'd like to see, here's the, on one page, the script for the page, opposite it is the breakdowns by Giffen for the page.
Sure.
That kind of stuff. It'd be awesome.
That'd be fun.
I would pay good money for that.
That'd be really fun. Yeah. Well, let's do it. hey, if you're going to buy it, I'm sure plenty of other people.
Who do I give my money to? Show me the slot I put my money in.
Yeah, right. Dan Didio, if you're listening.
Sorry we talk so long.
There you go.
Yeah, if you're listening, or all of this will be late.
Don't worry. This episode's not going to be 5 hours and 20 minutes long. At least that much we know.
Okay, the floor. Let's do the floor.
Let's do the floor all at once, because the floor is nice and simple. Okay, 520 Kane Street. Yeah. We know that already. Clockwise, as they read as follows, 51, 53, 54, 56, 55, 55... 53, 54, all that stuff in there. There's no 52 there.
Yeah, that.
So that makes people think it might be the 52 seconds.
Well, it's 52 is just missing. So whether it's seconds, minutes, months, years, whatever, who knows? Or characters.
Yeah. Book cover with
is
knife on it.
Is that anything proprietary as a design? Like, is that the sword that Warlord carries, or any of the sword and sandal characters? That, like, John, do you recognize that as, like, some particular person?
Must be looking straight through it. Where is that?
Lower left-hand corner.
Oh, I see it.
Yep.
That doesn't look the least bit familiar to me.
Yeah.
Infinity Inc., we've seen them already, so skip that. Casey the Cop. Casey the Cop is interesting.
That's the feature they had, and again, I think they're, again, trying to pull in anything and everything that DC ever published and, you know, fitting in what makes sense to fit in.
Yeah. Silver Blade we went through already. Book called Who's Who we went through already. But here are the two big ones, and I'll put them together here. Find the Sun Devils and What is the Spanner's Galaxy?
Okay, are either of you familiar with Spanner's Galaxy?
Nope.
It was a six-issue miniseries back in the mid to late 80s, I think. And it basically featured a guy who is kind of, you know, on the run or whatever. And the big gimmick was you could do castling and essentially swap places with somebody if they agreed to it. Which means you could basically wind up in their jam and they could wind up in your jam and, you know, wackiness ensued or whatever. It was a serious sci-fi kind of event. So that's kind of what is Spanner's Galaxy. And this goes back to my theory that they're taking as many things as they can and trying to say, oh yeah, sure, we published it as a standalone miniseries, but we're pulling it into the DCU. Sun Devils, another miniseries or limited series, and I don't think I read that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Spanner's Galaxy, where was this galaxy?
I don't know that they ever really established where it was. It was just, you know, Spanner, and he was in a galaxy.
Could it have something to do... I mean, could this galaxy itself have something to do with what they found at the end of the galaxy? Maybe they found, like, the beginning of Spanner's Galaxy? I don't know. I'm grasping at straws here.
I mean,
they
could place it anywhere they wanted to. Like I said, I don't think it had any ties whatsoever to the DC Universe at the time. And I would be amazed if it's got any major relevance to the plot.
It just happened. It just happened, and they're reminding us that it happened.
Yeah, it goes back to it's one of the things they published that nobody remembers.
Yeah, I think it's a wink. I think it's just, you know, it's another one of those things that's sort of a wink at the smarts, you know, that you recognize it if you're somebody that is as well-read as John, but I'd be surprised if it ends up being something that affects what comes later.
I see this as opening the doors, and they're saying, hey, if somebody has an idea and they want to use something from Spanner's Galaxy, sure, what the hell.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean...
and my God, we're done with the floor and the frickin' board, finally.
One last important thing, though, for the, you know, if you get the comic in front of you, turn the page, and, of course, you know, the board reads, time is broken, and then the next thing the Booster does is he walks the wall where really, and, you know, boy, if Rip Hunter wrote that board, he was really losing it when he started writing on the walls, you know, it's all his fault, it's all his fault, it's all his fault, but then look at the last panel... And now, having gotten further into the series and seen the Skeets revelation, you notice even more clearly there's a picture tacked up, his fault, two red arrows. The first picture looks like one arrow points to Booster, the other points to Skeets. Next picture down, picture of Booster and Skeets, his fault, red arrow seems to be pointing to Skeets. Next down, magazine cover, two green arrows pointing at Booster, one yellow arrow, and a post-it note that says, it's his fault, that arrow pointed at Skeets.
But... that actually tells us something very important.
Yep.
That tells us when the stuff was written.
Yeah, that's true.
And do you know how it does that? That event was Booster taking on Mammoth on week one, day five.
That's
from the first issue.
So, in other words, he went missing sometime after that.
That's my theory.
Yeah, and I do think that it's when Booster and Skeet started... you know, showed up this time is when time got broken. So, you know, that's, I think, when all of this really hit the fan for Rip Hunter. And, of course, Booster sees this. It's his fault. Whose fault? Who? Me? Question mark. So is it Booster, you know, blonde guy that he is, and I say this as a blonde man myself, missing all the obvious things that it's Skeet. But then later, when Skeet sees this through Daniel's eyes, thinking he knows, meaning... Booster knows that it was me. Or, I'm sorry, he knows that Rip Hunter knows. So it's not only Skeets realizing when Skeets gets to see all this, oh, Rip Hunter knows, is on to me, Skeets. But also, it's really interesting that Booster hides this from Skeets.
I'm curious how he hides it from Skeets. Why isn't Skeets monitoring?
Monitored, like, by the monitors?
No, by, like, the goggles like he does with Daniel.
I don't know. I mean, maybe that's something that, you know, because Skeets didn't get to see and didn't have as tight of a rein on the Booster that he lost, maybe he, when he puts this new booster in the suit, specifically because Skeets has a plan to get a look inside Rip Hunter's cave that he didn't get to get last time, he rigged him up to make sure that he sees it this time.
It's clear, even by this point, that Booster's unreliable. So,
well, I think that this might have something to do with the fact that maybe this entity that it's possible. Well, like I said, I'm not sure Skeets has been evil this entire time. So maybe this entity that took over Skeets has just asserted itself enough where it can finally start, you know, messing with the armor and, you know, being in charge long enough to make changes like this.
I think Skeets was taken over, whatever, back in issue one.
Yeah, when he powers off and gets powered back on. Although there is something to be said for if, you know, whatever presence, be it an evil Skeets or something, you know, in Skeets that is has changed him, you know, he does need to get away with all this stuff without Booster knowing. So I suppose, sure, but, you know, Skeets probably could have talked the John Booster into, you know, like, oh, can I do something to your goggles and rigged it all up. But it seems like there's more of an opportunity once you have an empty suit for Skeets to, you know, make any modifications to that suit he needs to before he puts Daniel in it and sends him into, you know. Because you do feel like the whole reason he approaches Daniel is specifically because Skeets has to get into Rip Hunter's lab again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a quick email that I want to read here from Matthew Guy before we wrap things up here. He basically, he goes through all the questions that I asked in the initial response, and this is what he has to say. To the question, what is your current take on 52? He responds, a solid series that is well-paced, focusing on B and C-list characters in the DCU in the absence of the DCU Trinity. The series is in its 5 months for me as I get 52 monthly, but I enjoy 52 overall. Some subplots I like now are ones I didn't like when they first came out, i.e. Black Adam Angry Negative, Black Adam with Isis, and The Wedding of Positive. And many other subplots are the same way, with ups and downs week in and week out, focusing on different characters as 52 continues. Overall rating A-. To the question, who are your favorite characters? He goes, the question, Renee Montoya and Batwoman. That subplot has been the most enjoyable to read each month for me. That is truly exciting. Is there any aspect of 52 you would like to see more of as the series continues? More of the chalkboard of future drawings explained. It is the greatest mystery that I want the answer to now, as it aids me into understanding a bit more about 52 as I read each issue. Less of critics saying 52 is going to fail. It sells on average around 100,000 to 140,000 copies per week. That delivers in both in art and writing. And so far, critics have been proven wrong, as DC has been dedicated to shipping 52 out on time as promised. Repackage. Make the two-page bios and history of DCU into its own special to go with series in trade form. What questions remain unanswered that you feel need answers? The questions from the chalkboard scenes need to be addressed in some manner by 52 final issue. Another question, waiting to find out, will this character make it out of 52 alive or die in 52? And most of all, would you pick up another weekly comic book if DC decides to make it? Not immediately after 52, give me a breather. Time from all these events series for 6 to 9 months that goes for DC and Marvel. Let me enjoy a comic without it tying into this over here and that over there. Focus on a limited series for maybe 12 weeks on a great DC character or on a team book, perhaps. And that's from Matthew Guy. So interesting takes there from Matthew. And the last question that he asks is the last question I want to ask you guys. Would you pick up another weekly comic from DC if they decide to make it after 52?
I would. Yeah. I mean, I'm loving the format. And as Matthew said, that I think hasn't come up, but it is really important. I love that it's B and C list characters and that it's not a team book. You know, it's an ensemble book. So the notion that you can have a book where the true star is the setting, it's the, you know, the place itself, just like the star of The Wire is Baltimore, you know, rather than any of the characters. You can have a book that truly showcases how rich and wide and deep of a toy box the DC Universe is, and you can have characters that could never carry their own title and would never end up on a team together. So, you know, and I love those characters. God, I mean, to think you would have never 2 years ago have told me that, you know, Animal Man, my favorite, would be back, you know, and would be in the mainstream DCU and would be somebody who's part of, even in a small part, this big, important, huge narrative. You know, I just figured he's, you know, that's, I would never think that we could get him back. So I would love, you know, I don't think I want one right away, because I could imagine that these writers and the editors need a break. Some of them already left, but, you know, the, so I don't need it to be 53, but I would love, once things normalize, once we're into, you know, 2 years later and 3 years later of the DC Universe, I would love a weekly book that's not an anthology and gets to continue to be event, you know, like plot driven, and, you know, gets to be as diverse of a look at the DC Universe week after week. Absolutely.
Part of it with 52 is they've spent so long planting the seeds, planning this particular storyline, working towards it and stuff. Can they do that kind of in perpetuity or whatever? I really doubt it. If they could, I'd love it. I mean, what I'd like to see, if they could keep up the quality, is kind of a backbone book for the DC Universe, which kind of, you know, ties in, you know, at least tangentially references the various events going on. So to where if you want to keep up with the overall continuity of what's going on, this would be the go-to place, you know, whatever they would call the series. Have, you know, a place to use the B, C, D, and Z list characters, keep people in play, you know, explore things that would otherwise, you know, just get cast off into limbo. But really, that's such a monumental undertaking that, you know, it'd be difficult to do. If they're going to do it, they need to do it well. And to do it well takes a lot of time and resources. So.
Well, I think that that they can do it, and as you as you stated, it has to be done well. So I don't want to see something that's more like DCU Presents, where you know you get a different story every week and it's just one shots and all that. I want to see something that has a bit of continuity to it, like 52. And I want to see sort of like the rotating cast that we have in 52, where, you know, 1 week we see these guys, the next week we see the next guys, and we're back to the other guys, and there's all these different stories happening at once, but give us some time to recover from 52 before you do something like that again. Because if you do it so soon, it's going to feel like you're oversaturating the market and you're just not going to get those people to come back. But if you leave a good taste in people's mouths from 52, you'll be able to pull something off like this again. And it's been proven that this could be very successful to bring people back to the comic shop time and time again. So, hey, if it worked once, it can work again if done properly.
I think a lot of why it works now is because they've got a almost once-in-a-lifetime opportunity here of having a one-year gap in continuity between kind of two major events of Infinite Crisis and the one-year later stuff. These opportunities don't come by that often.
Well, then it would have to be, you know, characters that aren't being used elsewhere. That's the thing. You know, you'd have to still make it B and C list characters, but just say, this is where these characters are going to show up. If you want to find these characters, they'll be in this month, you know, in this weekly title. That's where you're going to have to find them. Similar to what they did with 52, but obviously you're not going to have the luxury of a missing year to put that in.
Yeah, but 52 is also kind of a core continuity aspect, whereas just an anthology-ish intertwined book of, you know, B and C list characters, unless there's something to make it relevant, to make it seem like you've got to follow this and you want to follow this week in, week out, I don't know that it would be successful. You know, I don't want to see another Action Comics Weekly is what it comes down to.
Well, I don't want to see another Action Comics Weekly either, because that was pathetic. That was not exactly the best book. That was far from the best book DC's ever put out. So we definitely want to avoid something like that.
I didn't read it, but I don't hear good things. Yeah, no, and I certainly understand John's point that they definitely took advantage of a unique opportunity. And even though this is the year without Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, you still kind of hook into them to get people interested. I mean, it had to spin out of an event that very much was all about Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. So, you know, if you had a weekly DC Universe book, it does feel like it would need to be about interplay between the other big books and consequences of books and things like that. But scheduling-wise, continuity-wise, that'd be a nightmare. Like, it would be cool to see the way in which, you know, a B-list character like Montoya or The Question or, you know, whatever new group of B-list characters they would bring into a weekly book would react and be affected by, let's say, the events in that month's issue of Justice League or Superman or Justice Society. But again, the timing of that would be a nightmare. So it does feel like, as much as I would love to have a weekly book that isn't just an anthology but is rather telling a bigger present story, it would be so hard to do. You know, I mean, it helps that you know, this year being told in 52 was one that was carefully carved out to be played with.
If they do another series, though, I would not do it in real time. I think that would be a hideous mistake.
Okay. Yeah, they could give themselves that break, at least.
I agree with that,
basically, time elapses in the series as it elapses, and then you just put in touchstones to where you were basically referencing this Batman arc that went 6 issues or 2 issues or 12 or whatever. It kind of happened here.
Okay.
You know, and not lock stuff down hard, but just give it a time frame. You know.
So don't go Jack Bauer again.
No, you can't, because they've gotten to the point where they've got 15 years of back history-ish, you know, thereabouts for the DC Universe. They now have a hard one-year time frame that's locked in, and now they're moving forward in time, you know, past that. So every character has aged another year out of this. You know, you do that too often, and you wind up with, you know, really, really old, you know, teen sidekicks.
Yeah. Yeah, there won't be the Teen Titans longer.
If this were Marvel, what I would suggest doing is basically do it as a S.H.I.E.L.D. series, rotate through various characters in and out of S.H.I.E.L.D. as they interact with the various people, like keep tabs on them or whatever. You could conceivably do that with Checkmate or something like that.
That could work.
You know, to get back to an earlier point, it does show you why so many TV shows star detectives. I mean, you know, when you set up a TV show, the premise and the concept needs to involve characters who, again, like S.H.I.E.L.D. agents or Checkmate agents or detectives, have a reason to, week after week, walk into the middle of somebody else's story.
Or reporters.
You know, that whose job is to step into an event after the murder has happened or after the case is broke or, you know, things like that, that, you know, that gives all of these off-screen characters the support work to do. I could see that working, you know, in the universe, and I wouldn't be surprised, especially now that Wacker is at Marvel and 52 made money, for Marvel to try something like this. But yeah, it does feel like it would almost need to be something like S.H.I.E.L.D. agents interacting with other B-level characters. It would be harder to schedule interactions with characters that have their own books.
Well, and
that's,
you don't
where
even
the
need
timing would become tricky.
Direct interaction with them, because you do that interaction in their other book, and then you just pick a point in time in the main series storyline to say, okay, this fit in here.
Yeah, that's true.
You have somebody walk out the door, he spends 6 issues in Captain America's book or Batman's book or whatever, and he comes back, you know, 2 issues, 2 panels, whatever, later.
And it's worked before. So, I mean, that could pretty much work. If you do it right, it could work, but I don't know if you could do it right. We'll just have to wait and see if they actually give it a shot over at Marvel. Who knows? Yeah. Any final thoughts on 52 before we wrap this baby up?
And this is, again, getting back to a thing that that Matthew said in his email that I think is great at the week that we're at now that it's 23, is that I agree that, you know, I think a lot of people were you know, and some of the writers in the interviews have made this analogy, people were first watching the way in which some NASCAR fans watch looking for the car wreck. You know, I think a lot of people were skeptical, and I love that. With so many issues in the can, it feels like they're around the bend. You know, it feels like they're over the hump or whatever metaphor you want to use, that I think it's all going to come out on time. Yeah. I do think that they're going to pull it off, and what a great thing. And it's wonderful when some of that pressure of, oh my God, are they going to screw it up, goes away, and we can start to really appreciate what they've built. And I think that, and I understand some people's, you know, criticisms of, okay, you know, there's too many unanswered questions and things like that, but when these things start to connect to each other, and when these threads weave together, and when we start to get payoffs, I think it's going to be fantastic, and I think it's going to really reward those that have stuck with it and paid attention to it, and it'll be a big success. And, you know, I'd love to see more, whether it's a weekly title or not, I'd love to see more events that utilize the writer's room. You know, I think so much of why this is so good, and it I'm sure it was expensive. It's got to be expensive to pay 4 writers, a breakdown guy, and an artist for each issue. And TV's the same way. I mean, it's expensive to run a writer's room on TV, but there's a reason why often TV shows, to me, I think some of the best-written TV shows are better than some of the best-written films, is that, you know, you've got a team working together instead of one screenplay that gets bounced from writer to writer to writer. And I would love to see this even be a model for future big events. you know, that the next time they need some big event, even if it's a monthly one, instead of just the one writer, gather another A-list team again. Because I think we've seen what can come of it.
I 100% agree with that statement. Because when you put the A-list on something, you'll get an A-list book.
And people that can bounce ideas
almost always.
You're going to get that sense of collaboration, you know, that it's just bound to tell a wider story that uses more of the toys than any one writer's going to do.
Yeah. John, any final thoughts?
I think the main thing that's come of it so far, other than just being a commercial success, is it's really kind of moved forward the writing and production style of comics to be much more like Dave said, you know, TV, you know, mindset. Get a group of writers in there, tell bigger stories, tell interconnected stories, get some synergy going. And it's funny because, you know, 20, 30 years ago, this sort of a thing, to a degree, seemed at least a lot more common across, you know, Marvel and DC books, where, you know, they had fewer titles, they could keep things coordinated better, either at the writer or editor level or whatever. As they started coming out with so damn many books, I mean, they've gotten it to where they can't keep, you know, much of anything in sync. So to be doing it with this weekly series, you know, hopefully they'll learn from this, and they can, you know, start weaving a tighter continuity, building bigger picture stories. And really what I hope comes out of this and the 1 year later stuff is the sense that a lot of what can work for comics is giving the readers that joy of discovery, letting them find new characters, new aspects, new ideas, new places in the universe to explore, that sort of thing. Keep the readers engaged, and, you know, everything benefits from that. You get more readers, you get happier readers, you get more investment from the readers, you know, emotionally, and, you know, that's something that had been so lacking in a lot of previous both titles and event titles from both Marvel and DC. So I see this as just so far a major success. And I expect at some point we're going to hit, you know, kind of the climax part of the overall story arc. And we're just going to be, you know, getting our socks blown off on a weekly basis. I'm looking forward to that.
My final thoughts are somewhere along those lines, where there's a reason why people keep tuning in to 24 week after week after week. It's because you're presented with this idea that this is all taking place in 24 hours. Sure, it might be ridiculous that it's happened about 5 or 6 times already in this life of this this TV character, but 52 works because we know that this is only happening once here, and you've got so many different characters living out an entire year in front of your eyes. Each issue is a week in time. In the world of comic books, you don't find that very often because, well, sequential time and comic books don't usually go together. Spider-Man has been in his 20s for about how many years now? 30 years now? It's people do not age. But here we're seeing an evolution of characters for once, and it's something that comic books have missed for a very, very long time. 52 is doing it right, and this is time that these characters are never going to get back, and yet it's still going to evolve them. They're growing, they're becoming new and different, and it's something that we really needed as readers, too, because there's a reason why we go out to the comic shop every single week to pick up 52, because it's intriguing, it's got great creators, it's got great artists, it's got similar artists and similar inkers and colorists on it, so that it feels like it's one continuous series, even though there's different artists on the book, which is something I love about it. All in all, they've done this absolutely perfect so far. I couldn't ask for anything better, and hopefully the second half of 52 will be as good or possibly even better to give me the conclusion that I'm looking for in this. And hey, it's a television series in comic book form. They did a great job.
You know, to borrow another TV term, you know, keeping that look consistent, it's, you know, it's the same thing television does, that the directors will be different episode to episode, but you keep the same DP, the same director of photography, which is essentially what Giffen is doing.
Yep.
He's ensuring that there's the visual look issue to issue by, you know, in a sense, framing and lensing all these scenes that, you know, somebody else will as an artist direct. So I feel like he's taken a lot of what can work so well in television, and he's augmented it with, you know, a season that gets to be 52 episodes and have an unlimited special effects budget.
I think he's been the best thing to happen in DC in ages.
Mm.
Oh, sure. And Marvel, too, because Annihilation's been fantastic so far, too. So he does events right. Keith Giffen is the type of guy that, you know, he can do those, you know, he can do those funny books with the Giffen DeMatteis years, or he can do those serious books with what he's doing now with the art on 52 and with the stuff he's doing for Boom Studios and all that stuff, and even with the Annihilation. He's just doing comics right, and he's one of the best creators out there, and I'm glad they have him on this book. And with that, my timer says exactly 3 hours here. So I think I'm going to split this up into two episodes, actually. So one will probably be released on Friday, and then we'll have one released sometime next week. But wow, this has certainly been an episode that goes all aspects of 52, and well, it was a large episode, just like 52 is a large series, so it made perfect sense. And I was glad to have both you guys join me for this, because David, it's been a pleasure. Well, talking to you for the first time, because, you know, we've corresponded over the boards, but haven't really talked to you before, and it's been a pleasure talking to you, and
hey,
hope to talk to you in the future.
Speaking out with you till the small hours of the Eastern Standard Time night.
Are you going to be at New York Comic Con?
I think so. Yeah, I'm going to imagine, unless I'm out of town for some reason, I would certainly be there.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, I hope to see you there.
John, will
definitely.
You be coming to New York for the show? Or?
I don't think so. I'm hoping to make it out for Comic Geek Speaks 200th episode, but I have not gotten that locked down just yet.
Very cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be at CGS 200 for sure, because I was at 100 and I couldn't see myself missing 200. So, but nevertheless, John, thank you very much for joining us again. It's always a pleasure having you on, and while you bring plenty to the table with your numbers and with your extensive knowledge of comic books.
Yeah, I've got to say, good God, there wasn't a thing on the board or in the, you know, that you didn't know. You know, you could probably rival Mark Waid with some of the stuff you pulled out tonight.
Oh, not even close.
Oh, no, come on, man. Mark Waid's a walking computer.
I do it. Mark Waid, then you've got Adam Murdo, and then you've got Peter Rios, then you've got, you know, a couple of people, then you've got Brian Deemer, and then you've got me.
Well, Brian remembers as much as he as much as he forgets, so that works. I just had to make that statement. I'm sorry. But anyway, anything upcoming that you want to plug here quickly, John?
Let's see. I think I'm going to be on another episode, let's see, of Comic Geek Speak. We've talked about the which is again the same stuff I'm doing with Chris over Collected Comics Library. Beyond that, no, I don't really think I've got anything major to plug.
Anything out of you, David?
I would just, if you're clearly, if you've gotten to this point in the episode, you're as big of a 52 fan as we are. There's usually a great and lively discussion that we have on the CGS board every week that starts the day that the new 52 issue comes out. There's a wonderful group of fellow crackpot theorists and people that have great knowledge of the universe, and it's usually a pretty good discussion. So if you want to keep the discussion going week to week, just check out the CGS forum and look for the newest 52 thread.
Any chance you guys could start a Skype cast or something a couple of days, like, you know, the following Tuesday or whatever after it comes out?
I'm sorry, say it again. Start a what?
Like a Skype cast. In other words, you know, get it to where people can actually, you know, talk back and forth on some of this stuff.
Oh, geez. Well, Grandpa here is on a landline phone. I don't have the Skype that the kids have. So, power to you if you want to get one going, but for me, it'll still. Plus, the nice thing about the forum discussions is that I can be paid by my employer. They're underwritten. I can do them while I'm at my boring job at work.
There is that.
Well, with that, let's wrap things up here. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at comicgeekspeak.com/forum, graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys. We are listed under the Comic Timing heading on there, which is pretty easy to find. Our 22 pages for the month of November will be Superman Confidential number 1, and we've got some special guests for that one and possibly even a crossover planned. More information forthcoming on that, but that one is Darwin Cook and Tim Sale, comes out on November 1st, and we should have that episode about 2 weeks afterwards, so if you want to be in on the talk of that, just pick it up, and we will discuss it. Don't forget to vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Also, it has been confirmed that Comic Timing will be at New York Comic Con in the podcast, I believe they're calling it the Podcast Arena. So we will be over at Podcast Arena. So obviously, if you want to stop on by and say hello at New York Comic Con, can go ahead and do so, and we'll have more information on that forthcoming. Don't forget to send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. Just look us up on iTunes and give us a review. We'll be more than happy to read the review if you so put it on there. Positive or negative, either way, just let us know how you feel. And other than that, I think I have run out of things for my mouth to say, other than David and John, once again, an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I hope to have you back in the future.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Great talking to you guys.
All right. And great talking to you, man. And definitely a lot of fun here. And as always, there's always time for comics. And here's hoping that there were no problems with the recording, because that would royally suck.
If you redo, it would just be completely joyless.
Oh, man. Well, see, here's the thing, okay? And I'm saying this, I'm going to edit this out later, but I pulled a cord out very recently that was supposed to be out in the first place. So if half of it is fucked up, the only part that's going to be fucked up is my part, not yours. So if there is any problems, then I'm going to do sort of like me asking the question and then play your parts.
Oh my God, that sounds
okay? Actually, no, because I'm not losing this podcast.
Like madness.
What you ought to do for another podcast is do that kind of a thing as a crossover with Just Bill's Longbox podcast. Have a pause long enough for him to have answered. I agree. That's good for, you know.
Oh, Just Bill. If you're listening, buddy, we love you. We love you and your mysterious podcast that doesn't actually exist.
The self-parody that we all need.
Fuck yeah.